SBS Audio is supported by advertising.
Need a few minutes to reset? Great Minds is a podcast from SBS that guides you through different meditation styles from around the world. Listen wherever you get your podcasts.
SBS, a world of difference. You're with NITV Radio, on mobile, online and on radio.
We acknowledge the traditional owners of the land NITV Radio broadcasts from, the Cammeraygal people and their elders past and present. We also acknowledge all Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander tribes and clans we broadcast to, from the mountains to the plains, from the desert to the sea, from fresh water to salt water.
Yama, I'm your host, Marie Pakaia, and welcome to NITV Radio for this Wednesday, 22nd of January 2025. Coming up on today's show, we share a racism report with Australia's leading institutions, and we share a few interviews from the NITV Radio team. All of these stories coming up after the latest in news. You're listening to NITV Radio.
Australia Day 1972 saw the first Aboriginal embassy.
The native title legislation must be amended.
And they've walked this land so many times before anybody came.
I am sorry.
The top stories of today are a housing review has found 2025 will be the worst year for new building projects, and 26 January petition gains traction with prominent Indigenous Australians and leaders, and Queensland's government has launched a scheme to upskill First Nations communities in regional areas. The latest housing construction data to be revealed today is expected to show the worst year for new home building in more than a decade. Such news would threaten the National Housing Accord, an agreement between the state and federal governments to build 1.2 million new homes by 2029. The Housing Industry Association says there is dire need for 83,000 extra workers to meet demand for residential construction. It says it's currently hard to attract, train and retain skilled workers in the sector, and government policy needs to change in order to alter this. It says there needs to be wage subsidies for apprentices, streamlined visa systems and national campaign to promote people taking up trade. A teenager from Tiwi Islands north of Darwin has sparked a movement that's seen people from across the islands come together and rally against violence. The event held on Bathurst Island on the 21st of January saw service providers, police and dignitaries unite with community members in support of violence prevention. Wendell Putaramari is a 19-year-old Murup team leader from the island community of Wurrumyanga. His community experiences some of the highest rates of domestic and family violence in the country, something Putaramari hopes to change. Long-time anti-family violence campaigner Charlie King is a familiar face on the island.
I made a call to them about engaging to empower to the organisation. Get involved with communities, but make sure what you're doing is helping them develop the strategies they think that need to be done on their own community.
And if you are someone who needs support, you can seek 24-hour help through 1-800-RESPECT. That's 1-800-737-732. A number of prominent Indigenous Australians and leaders say they are supporting a petition for Australia Day to be moved from January 26. The petition currently has more than 21,000 signatures and is calling for real and meaningful action to change the date of Australia's National Day. Wamba Wamba Yoda Yoda Jaja Rurung woman, Nara Murray, is the co-chair of the First People's Assembly. She says changing the date means all Australians can celebrate together on a day that doesn't represent pain for First Nations Australians.
Their ripple effects are felt across generations, manifesting into social and economic and health inequalities that still persist today. To celebrate this date without acknowledging its impact is to ignore the pain and resilience of the First Peoples of this land. To change the date is to acknowledge the strength and resilience of our people who have survived centuries of attempt to erase our cultures.
The Queensland Government has ordered a full inquiry into the state's child protection system following a case that led to one of Australia's worst pedophiles being jailed for life. Queensland's blue card system, which gives people clearance for working with children, will form part of the review. Premier David Crisafulli says the chair of Queensland's Child Protection Review Panel, Luke Twyford, will lead the inquiry using special powers granted to the board in obtaining information from the Australian Federal Police, Queensland Service Police, and Department of Education.
These failures go back many years, and there have been many vulnerable children who have had some of the most horrendous things occur because of that broken system. But when it comes to the case of Ashley Paul Griffith, that was the one that really sheeted it home to Queenslanders. It was the most horrific of crimes. It highlighted failures in the system. More of the same isn't going to cut it. And we are taking action.
Griffith was given a life sentence and a non-parole period of 27 years in 2024 after pleading guilty to hundreds of sexual offences spanning almost 20 years. The Queensland Government has also launched a scheme to upskill First Nations communities in regional areas. The Crisafulli Government is committing $2.8 million to First Nations designed and led employment pathway projects. The funding will provide opportunities for former offenders, young people, school leaders and women to gain the skills they need to secure local jobs. Minister for Finance, Trade, Employment and Training, Ross Bates, says they want to support First Nations people gaining employment in vital industries like community services and local tourism around Cairns. In sport, Novak Djokovic says he'll feed off his win over Carlos Alcaraz as he tries to win a record 25th major tournament at the Australian Open. Djokovic has overcome a left thigh injury suffered late in the first set to beat Carlos Alcaraz in the four sets in his Australian Open quarterfinal. The score was 4-6, 6-4, 6-3, 6-4 in a 3.5 hour long match. Djokovic says everything else will be likely falling into place if he physically has the right to go.
It feels like you're feeding off this kind of win. So, I mean, that's how I feel now. So I hope to be able physically to be, you know, moving freely and to be able to be ready to play five sets, because I don't think I'm going to have mentally or emotionally an issue to face Zverev or to motivate myself or anything like that.
Tonight, Wednesday, Australian Alex de Minaur will try to make his first ever major semi-final when he takes on world number one Jannik Sinner in his quarterfinal. And today's weather for Wednesday, January 22nd, Perth, partly cloudy at 38, Adelaide, partly cloudy at 28, Melbourne, shower or two at 22, Hobart, also showers at 19, Canberra, partly cloudy at 34, Wollongong, possibly showers developing at 30, Sydney, possible showers again at 34, Newcastle, also possible showers at 38, Brisbane, partly cloudy at 35. Cairns, much the same, partly cloudy at 33. And the Torres Strait Islanders, same, at partly cloudy. Darwin, a shower or two at 33. That's today's forecast, and stay tuned to listen to today's interviews and stories.
Tell me you ain't gonna leave. Falling like leaves. Wearing this heart on my sleeve. Jeez, I just wanna do it. I just knew it from the moment we met. Moments we spent, I would never regret. I digress in my treasure chest. I ain't ever stressed. All the troubles in life, you make me forget. And you don't ever really do this, ayy. But you do it for me. You do it for me.
Get low, take it slow, wanna hit
this. And I ain't never really feel like this, ayy. But I feel for you. Hold up, wait a minute, I know all of this new business, I know all of them be tripping, baby I don't care though, I don't care yo for sure, I've been round the twist for a minute, thinking that this world had me finished, I've been thinking, blinking lanes, I've been switching, Tokyo drifting, I ain't never listen, let's bring your sweet lips, two lips couldn't capture your beauty, truly our love gotta be a movie, keep it moving, it keeps me soothing, and I ain't used to wear from the moment we met, moments we spent, I would never regret, I digress in my treasure chest, yeah I never stress, cause all of the troubles you make me forget, and you don't ever really do this, ayy. But you do it for me, you do it for me.
Get low, take it slow, wanna hit this.
And I ain't never really feel like this, ayy. But I feel for you, I feel for you.
Get low, take it slow, wanna hit this.
Learn to love you. Showed me how to love myself before I met you. There were stories I would never tell. I learned to love you. Now I'm coming out my shell. Letter by letter, you love me better.
Hey, now spell it out.
A, A, Z, Z, A, A, Z,
two, three. You don't ever really do this, ayy. Hey, but I feel for you. I feel for you.
On radio, online and mobile. You're with NITV Radio.
Raysham report finds universities are needing to take more measures to address the problem in Australia's leading institutions. Australia's human rights watchdog has warned of what it calls systemic and pervasive racism on the country's university campuses. The Race Discrimination Commissioner says decisive action to tackle the problem is needed from the sector, which insists it's committed to inclusivity. Akash Nagarajan is on the university path he hopes will one day lead him to become an industrial lawyer. His ambitions are motivated by a passion for defending the rights of others, but he says he himself became a target for racism while standing for student elections at the University of New South Wales.
Someone told me that I should be deported and that I don't belong here at university or in this country before saying that Australia was for the white man and doing the Nazi salute and taking one of my pamphlets and running away before I could do anything about it. You're not supposed to experience that on campuses. It's absolutely shocking and it makes me it makes me appalled.
And according to the Human Rights Commission, his experience is part of a more widespread, insidious problem. The interim findings of its Respect at Uni investigation warns that universities are not free from racism, even within such academic, higher learning spaces. It also said the safety concerns have been compounded by insufficient responses from these institutions. Race Discrimination Commissioner Jiri Sivaraman describes the concerns as a systemic and pervasive problem that needs to be addressed.
Clearly, universities need to do more to address racism. And I think that the starting point is acknowledging there's a problem and being willing to take action. And I think that can be evidenced by engaging with us and not putting barriers in place. They could be institutions that either challenge inequality or entrench inequality. And if they don't address the structural racism that can affect them, then they'll be entrenching inequality.
In response, Universities Australia, which represents the sector, said racism had no place in our universities and safe, inclusive campuses were essential. The group added that it's engaging with the Commission's ongoing work. Tensions on many campuses have been elevated this year with a wave of protest action over the Middle East conflict, an increase in reports of anti-Semitism and Islamophobia. Several universities are taking steps to examine policies on dealing with racism, bolstering complaint mechanisms, and student counselling services. Mr. Sivaraman says it's a start, but more is needed.
We can have this idea that because they're places of such great learning and scholarship that they're somehow immune from racism, but that's clearly not the case. So that's why I think it's so crucial for the sector to sit up and pay notice about this. And I will say that the engagement with universities has been good so far.
The report also highlighted the experiences of First Nations students and staff and international students, many saying they felt reduced to cash cows by universities. While those of Asian and African backgrounds were among the most common victims of racism. But some students, like Akash Nagarajan, have expressed concern about speaking out due to barriers to reporting or fear of the repercussions.
It completely undermines the fact that university is supposed to be a place of learning, supposed to be a place that fosters multiculturalism and diversity, when you undergo experiences like that and you can't do anything about it. I think the university has to provide some sort of reporting mechanism to show that people who do these sort of vile, like people who say this sort of stuff need to be dealt with.
UNSW Sydney told SBS it stands against all forms of racism and encourages staff and students to report it when witnessed. It says a newly launched mechanism has been set up to handle these complaints. This story is by Tom Stainer for SBS News, produced by Nairi Pakai for SBS NITV. RMIT study highlights issues with current access to internet for Indigenous communities and individuals. Dante Bex brings the story.
Accessing a bank account, logging into government services, or even checking on how friends and family are doing. The internet is playing an increasingly important role in society. But access to it is still not universal in Australia. New research conducted by RMIT University has found that despite some improvements in access, cost remains a huge barrier to greater digital inclusion. RMIT Associate Professor Lyndon Orman-Parker is a First Nations Digital Advisory Group member and was a Principal Research Fellow on the study.
Some of the biggest challenges is around affordability of the service, so being able to install a satellite dish in your house. So where you live in a community, you may not have access to a credit card. You may not have access to identity documents where you'll need to be able to provide by your own internet service for your own home. So therefore, you're relying on prepaid services.
The researchers visited 12 different remote communities with different population sizes over 3 years. They observed a 12% increase in the number of people using the internet and around 19% more regular internet users. The results are promising, but there is still a big problem with infrastructure. Dr. Daniel Featherstone, Senior Research Fellow at RMIT University, explains.
The challenge is that most of that relies on co-investment by the telcos, by industry, and where there's very small populations and very remote areas without the fibre optic network infrastructure, it's a lot more expensive to roll out to those communities and there isn't that return on investments.
Lauren Ganley, Head of First Nations Strategy and Engagement at Telstra, which helped fund the research, says the challenge goes beyond that too.
So there's the cost to build it, but then there's also there's a huge reliance on power in these in remote communities or in remote anywhere in Australia. So when there is a power outage, that you know dramatically affects the connectivity, which relies heavily on power. So that's a big barrier.
The study also found that 99% of mobile users rely on prepaid credit recharges, with low and unreliable incomes limiting the uptake of better value monthly plans. Ms. Ganley again.
People like that because they are in control of when and how they spend their income. And, yes, so I think that's the main reason that, you know, it's about having control over your own access to the internet.
There are new, cheaper, prepaid plans being implemented in these areas by providers. The aim is, rather than convincing people to adopt a new type of plan, to work with the one they prefer. Even so, it seems that having more affordable providers isn't the only issue to be addressed to increase connectivity in these communities. After giving people access to the internet, they also have the necessary skills to use it. Professor Orman-Parker explains.
It's very important that people have a reasonable level of digital literacy. It's so they can then go online and access government services, whether it's accessing Medicare, whether it's accessing Centrelink, whether it's accessing the tax office, whether it's doing your tax return. All of these essential services, which Australians must engage with, are being able to be accessed by people living in remote communities.
Even so, Jessa Rogers, Associate Professor at the University of Melbourne, says this is not the only aspect of digital literacy to be addressed.
I think a lot of Indigenous people do have digital skills. They can, you know, navigate things like email and websites and, you know, the things that they want to do online. It's when it comes to actually understanding the impact of choosing a prepaid service rather than a postpaid, or understanding how much data is on each different plan, or knowing which modem or other hardware they've got in their house which might be slowing down their connection. There is this emerging issue of connectivity literacy, so not the ability to do things online, but actually knowing how to buy or get services that meet your needs.
She says this is a task that needs strong government involvement.
There are great people doing great things, but I do think that the government and others should be investing in widespread research across Australia, not relying on one survey or one test or one organisation to do the majority of the work.
But even with all the barriers, Professor Orman Parker says Indigenous people are creating their own online communities.
So we've seen innovation in remote communities where people are engaging, younger people in particular, and are engaging in social media. They're engaging in production of their own cultural things. And for instance, doing videos and stories, putting them online, sharing them. We have seen an increase in participation in Facebook as a form of getting news and information services over the last 3 years as part of this project and report.
Still, there is much to be done to close the digital gap. Professor Orman Parker again.
There's a long way to go, but we are slowly making progress. But we need to bridge that digital divide so that Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander people can make informed decisions about their life and get online safely.
How you pick the song.
information on radio, online and mobile. You're with NITV Radio.
For today's interviews, NITV Radio produces Talk with Creatives. Uncle Lance O'Chin, singer-songwriter up on the coast. But first, NITV Radio producer Dante Bex sits down and talks all things January Sydney Festival event programming, Blackout, with Jacob Nash from Musical Acts by Dobby, Dance and Theatre, Drag and Storytelling. The month of January is full of deadly things to do and see in Sydney.
So Blackout is, you know, an inaugural program as part of Sydney Festival that obviously highlights the importance of displaying First Nations artistry and content for like a wider audience. How do you think it's like a positive change for Mob?
I think Sydney Festival, it has a really important role for all of us from around the country, but also from Sydney, well, from here too, because we're able to tell stories that are important. We platform First Nations stories and we give multiple artists across many genres the ability to share their stories with audiences in Sydney in January.
So, yeah, this program's filled with, like, a lot of diverse performances, installations, conversations. So how do you approach curating such a wide range of events while ensuring that each one remains to have, like, a connection to culture and the same cultural themes?
I think when curating the Blackout program, I've been lucky enough to do it over the last 4 years. We sort of, as a team led by me, look at what the conversations we're having as a mob collectively. What's affecting us? What's inspiring us? Who are our leaders? What do they want to say? So that sort of begins the conversation. We sort of put some pillars around what we think is important. And then we also look at the shows and the works and the exhibitions that are already existing that are here, ready to be told straight away. So it's a combination of sort of finding the bigger themes and then looking about how we can fill it out. This year, you know, we've, I think, post-referendum too, we sort of looked at how do we have bigger in-depth conversations? How do we look to have hard conversations? How do we care for country and how do we care for each other? And they've sort of, pulled together some of the bigger messages that we're sharing. And then across the whole program, you know, we definitely talk about all the things that are important to us as First Nation people. We do look to country. We've got stories that look to here that are based in Sydney, for example, Redfern Renaissance, which is over at Belvoir Street, looking at the history of black theatre in Redfern. We've got Plant a Promise, which also looks, it's a multi-purpose kind of work that looks at how we care for country, particularly after the devastating fires that occurred a couple of years ago. So we do sort of then, you know, get into the detail and how we want to share those important messages and themes.
Can you share some like insights into your personal creative journey and how your own cultural background influences the way that you approach curating and producing such significant programs like Blackout?
For me, I started, my artistic life, and it continues, as a set designer. So I studied at NIDA, studied set and costume design. And then I was lucky enough to do a few shows early on with people like Wesley Enoch and Wayne Blair over at Belvoir Street and sort of made my way over to Bangarra. And I was there for about 12 years and ended up as the head of design over there and worked closely with the company for many years, not only designing all the sets for their work, but also working alongside Stephen Page and helping him shape, you know, and curate what Belvoir was doing there. So I got a really diverse sort of experience of what curation can be and how to think about the bigger concepts of telling stories, you know, within a company. And that sort of transferred for me over to, you know, the festival. And when Wesley Enoch was the artistic director, we sort of started having a conversation about creating a role, an artist in resident role, which is the one I have now at the festival. And then as he left, that conversation continued with Olivia Ansell, and this role was created. And there had never been the First Nation role at the festival in a sort of creative artist position. So it's been really, it's been a really nice sort of transition from being an artist over to a curator. I sort of approach it in a very similar way as I do with making work. You know, you have to think, you have to listen, you have to respond, and solve creative possibilities, and work very collaboratively with all the members of the team. And I think for me, on a personal level too, I really love the ability to be able to platform our stories in Sydney for people of Sydney, and hopefully, you know, for the people of Australia too. You know, I think I've been, I think really lucky to have that role, and I'm super excited to get to January now and share all the stories that we've been working on for the last 12, 18 months and see them, you know, in front of an audience and out in the world.
Finally, something's been done for it, to be involved for a First Nations person as part of the festival. And you mentioned it in January as well. So do you think that having the festival, especially Blackout, around January with the complexities of like January 26th has affected any of it in any way? Or what do you think about that?
Yeah, so the festival, Sydney Festival, has been on in January for quite a number of years. And that's, you know, sort of, for First Nation programming, really sort of came to a head when Wesley was festival director, Wesley Enoch, and he created an event called The Vigil. And that was in 2019. And The Vigil existed, or he put it together, so people could gather on the 25th of January. And it's continuing today. Obviously, I'm sort of the caretaker of Vigil. But he wanted to bring people together so that we could think about collectively what the next day meant and how we could have these conversations, these really important conversations about identity, and how we move forward together, but led by us as First Nations people. And I think for me, that really was an artistic, political, cultural response to a really complex, at that point, and not that it isn't still, but a really complex conversation for the, you know, what is the 26th of January. And so I think art gives the ability, the making of art, the storytelling, the coming together, it allows for conversations, hard conversations to be had. You know, we might be talking about political stuff and having deep conversations, but with coming together as, you know, driven by a form of art, it allows for conversations to sort of reverberate, I think, in a much more sort of there is no direct outcome, but we can have deep conversations between ourselves and between black and white community and really think and consider, you know, what's important for us. How do we move forward? How do we keep moving forward on the 25th? Of January and looking out to the 26th and beyond. I think, Wesley began The Vigil in 2019, and it's remained a part of the Sydney Festival programming. And each year we've looked at, and he's had, I think, three vigils before he stepped down as artistic director. He looked at, 250 years of colonisation, and I worked with him, we placed 250 flags up on Barangaroo headland. We've also told stories about the future. Last year we had Malia Choir, you know, up there singing, and that was also about looking you know, beyond listening to the voice of our, you know, young First Nations peoples and thinking about, you know, what they want as much as anything. They, for them to sort of have a moment to lead the conversation. So I think in a lot of ways, the vigil is about giving opportunity and a platform so we can sort of hopefully set the agenda for some of the really important conversations that need to happen throughout the year. Yeah. The vigil this year should be pretty special too. We've kind of, on the 25th of January, we've got an evening performance, as we always do, down at Barangaroo, and then you can head over to Walsh Bay and the ACO and see, oh my God, my brain, Dobby perform his album Warungu River Story. And that sort of is sort of making vigil this year a little bit bigger. You know, we've got programming at Barangaroo, can walk down 9 o'clock, see Dobby, and then, you know, it's a pretty strong mix of stories about change, stories about country, and what we think are the most important things we need to share this year.
That was Dante Beck speaking with Jacob Nash. Blackout of Sydney Festival programming has been running over the course of January 2025, with free and ticketed events still available. To find out more, search Sydney Festival Blackout to plan a deadly day. Up next, we speak with musician, songwriter and artist Lance O'Chin.
On radio, online and mobile. You're with NITV Radio.
Afternoon, this is Nairi Pakai from NITV and today we're talking to Lance O'Chin. Based in the Sunshine Coast, he's a musician right up there and I just wanted you to introduce yourself. Who's your mob, where you're from?
Hello, my name's Lance O'Chin and a lot of people call me Uncle now because I'm nearly about 70 years old. And I'm originally from Sherbourg, and that's where I was born. My dad, his family from a place called Winton, and at Winton, there's the Sakoa people, and my mother is Cubby Cubby people and Walk Walker people on her mother and father's side. My dad's father was Chinese. That's hence the name O'Chin. I now live on the Sunshine Coast and visit Sherbourg regularly sometimes.
So it's about that time of year, coming into January 26, and we just wanted to know, what are your plans coming up? Are you doing any music, seeing people, family, or spending time out in community?
Well, I think I'm going to go to a local Invasion Day thing up the Sunshine Coast here. If not, I'll be going to Brisbane to be with our mob down there. Hopefully, I might be able to get to play or do some songs. But at the moment, I haven't heard anything from people in regards to playing as a muso. So I'm just going to enjoy the old day. Yeah.
Well, we know that music is incredibly important to you. I wanted to know, how does your growing up, your family, or your identity and experiences influence the music that you've written?
Well, as you know, I was born on Cherbourg, and Cherbourg had a very negative effect on me as growing up, because we weren't treated like human beings. We were treated like people that had to do what they told, more or less. And if you disobey the law, your parents get sent away, or you get sent away. People growing up in the cities and stuff like that have no idea about what happened to Aboriginal people on the mission. And so my songs are mainly talking about, what I sing about is what happened to our people over the past 250 years now, and how hard it was for our people. Like one of the songs I wrote was Our Land. It's about the stealing of our land. Then another song was Back in the Days. We're talking about back in the days when in Aboriginal society they used to live, and then the white men come and took all their freedom away. You know what I mean? So all of those songs are relating to what happened to the Aboriginal people in the past. Yeah.
So you have some really impactful songs called Back in the Days, Our Land, talking about 1988, and you also have worked with other people. What was that like working with people like Lyle Munro and Bob McLeod?
Yeah, well, working with Lyle, I used to work with him in the legal service in Sydney, and he knew us, a singer from Cherbourg, and because he knew I was playing with Mop and the Dropheads before I went to Sydney, and Lyle had a lot of influence on my understanding of what happened to Aboriginal people. And fellas like Bob McLeod and Kev Carmody, they influenced me a lot. What I was going to say was that because of those influences that I had with those people, that's how I come out to be able to write songs that mean something to me. Mainly, it was mainly for me. It was glad to when people got to hear the songs and got our message. And that's the only way I believe that we should be able to do songs, because music is the thing that people listen to. Like if I got up there and started preaching about the history and all that, people usually tend to don't listen. But if you're singing something and you've got nice melody and chorus and stuff like that, people, it'll stick in their mind. So that's what I find with music, yeah.
Yeah, music is a way to almost transcend language and breaks down those barriers.
Yeah, that's true. And it's like music is not confronting. When you confront people, they tend to get their backs up, and then they show their real true colors. But with music, they'll tend to listen to it and not really complain about it, but they'll also get the message, you know. And Mop from the Dropouts, and she like the Mop from Mop and the Dropouts is my nephew, so that's why I've had a lot to do with him. And we worked together on an album called Dark Moods. We did a few love songs, and we did a few Aboriginal songs. Like there's a song that I worked on. It's called Share Big Boy, from where I come from. And that kind of thing, you know. So people are proud when they, especially when they come from Cherbourg, and they hear that song. They say, "Oh, that's our song," you know. One day I went to football and Kingaroy, and just watching, because I lived down in Brisbane and Toowoomba at the time, but we went up to watch the grand final at Kingaroy, and Cherbourg won the grand final. And at the end, they all gathered around, armed around each other, and they sang Cherbourg Boy.
Which was,
it was like, it was very touching for me, yeah. So, yeah.
I don't know if you're currently working on anything, but is there anything that you currently are doing or something that you've done in the past?
Yeah, well, one thing I'm really working on now is with the help of the Cubby Cubby people and Aussie Wheel up in Sunshine Coast. I'm trying to do a theatre up here, like a theatre for the educational for the people at Aussie Wheel. But at the moment, we're still looking for funding for that because we put it in for reconciliation, but we got knocked back. I don't know why, because we want to build a theatre there so that the people that are visiting Aussie Wheel, they can see what the Aboriginal people of this area used to do and all that type of stuff and the meaning of the places here. At Coolum Mountain, Coolum is the name of a warrior, and Maroochy is his wife. All of those things that people don't know and how they intertwine with each other. And that's what we wanted to show at Aussie Wheel.
That sounds really interesting, working in theatre. Do you have experience working in theatre or working with people in that space?
Oh, yeah, I've worked in theatre, like the Rambo Serpent Theatre in, that's the Belvoir Theatre. I've done a play there called, it was about a girl that's fair. She lost her identity and she found her roots, you know what I mean? She found where she come from and all of her parents and stuff like that. So it was like, we only had four people in the play, but it was, then we even had a song too. The song was written by Jenny Guy. So I remember the song's called New Nara Narakul, which means my daughter or something like that. Yeah, and Jenny Guy is related to Joey Guy. So I've worked with Annie Dingo and did some stuff with Paul Kelly, not the music wise, but I got him for at the Queensland Art Gallery. We ran an exhibition called Balance. Balance was a show that collaborated white and black working together on a project on mainly art. And it was like a very successful weekend, or launch anyways. The launch was we had a dinner dance and a thing like that, a dinner ball. So it was worth it because the Queensland Art Gallery actually put out a lot of money to have this event on, you know. So we got artwork from all over Australia, Adelaide, Northern Territory, Torres Strait Island, Chairbeck, nearly all the Aboriginal communities. We got artwork from all the different things, you know. So with Aussie Wheel, with the project at Aussie Wheel, it's not just a theatre, it's educational centre where people can walk through. And it's taken, and then we've got a theatre bet that will tell the history of this country, of Cubby Cubby country. And then we're going to have displays as well as live interaction with the Aboriginal people, like showing people how to make a fire with the two sticks and that kind of thing, maybe teach them a corroboree. All of that type of stuff. So it takes about an hour or 2 hours to get through the whole thing. And Aussie Wheel is providing the land and the venue. So, but we need to rebuild the buildings to put in the theatre and put in the old display, educational things as well, you know, in it. So I'm looking to the federal government actually to maybe support this project. Yeah, so that's one of the projects I'm working on this year.
Well, it's incredible to hear what you're doing, and we hope to hear more of the development of that. Before you go, I just wanted to know if you'd like to share with the audience where people can find you, where they can find your music.
You can find... There's some music on YouTube. There's some music on Facebook. If you look on Facebook, I was in a band called Dark Moods. I'm on the Sunshine Coast, and my email address is really easy. It's Lance, LANCOCHIN, the number 4, the letter U, @gmail.com. So it's Lance O'Chin for you. No apostrophe in it.
Absolutely. Especially anyone who's looking to get in and work with your theatre project and get in touch.
Yep, please do, because we're still looking for help with that. Maybe they might be able to do a submission or something like that that they're really good at. What they're mainly looking for is that we want the Cubby Cubby people to support this project, because it's about them. It's about their ancestors. It's about my ancestors. So that's what I want to get this up and running. But I'm not getting any younger, so anybody can help, please help me up. All right. That's about it, I think. Yeah.
Absolutely. Thank you for coming on. That was Lance O'Chin from the Sunshine Coast on NITV Radio.
Welcome back, listeners. This is Radio 2213 coming to you live on the sunny Tiwi Island. In the studio, we have B2M.
And that's all we have for today's show. This was NITV Radio.
What you come and see, I got everything you need, I got everything you want. I'ma hit you right now with the poetry. Baby girl, I got dreams, take a ride with me. So I'ma hit you real high, I'ma hit you real low. Leave you in the dance floor, screaming for more. From the north to the east, to the west, to the south. Bring it, get up, girl, get up, bring it, baby girl.
Alright, we're about to get so tight. And after that, type of guy, I'm a what the sun flies from across the coast. I cannot believe the way you're getting low. My mind will overload. I'm about to lose control over you. I search a pleasure. This body's got me going. I take you where you want. I gotta get you closer to me.
Alright,
we're about to get
so tight.
And after that,
to reset. Great Minds is a podcast from SBS that guides you through different meditation styles from around the world. Listen wherever you get your podcasts.